very busy. Many important matters require a king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am your fingers or your
king. Doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
He's one,
but girls.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to
the Joffrey of
podcast. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is
Catfish. And with us, as not always, is
it's Mork, and I'm sitting on Catfish's lap.
Now, Mork, you've got to sit up in that lap so we can hear you. You're already a little soft. Listeners, yeah. My name's Bubba. This is part of the Joffrey of podcast, first of his name, first in your hearts. Today are going to go forever to not only talk about this episode, but of the series as a whole. Now, we're going to have a follow-up podcast where we talk about the series as a whole. But today, we are going to be talking about the end of Game of Thrones, Season 8. Episode 6, we don't know the title yet, but it is incredible. This story that we probably all started, many of us started on TV back in 2011, has now come to an end. As we do with every podcast, we're going to tell you how we feel about this specific episode right at the top. Catfish, let's hear your ranking out of 10 for Season 8, Episode 6, the last episode of Game of Thrones ever.
Well, I'm sorry. I am going to have to, just in order to protect myself, I'm going to pass it over to Mork first. Mork, what did you give it?
I'm going to give it 8 double R's.
Double R's?
Redundant revelations. You think Danny's a killer, Arya? Thanks for spelling that out for us. We appreciate that insight, but a lot of cool stuff. I did feel like it could have just been tacked on to the bells, maybe a 3-hour episode. Maybe that would be too long, but not enough happened for me, but it was cool seeing some stuff get wrapped up, but I was slightly disappointed. But overall, my love for the show is as strong as it's ever been.
Dang. All right. Well, Catfish. Catfish.
I thought Mork was going to provide cover for me, but he absolutely did not. I am going to give it 7 what we all know are double T's.
Double T's?
Yeah. Toasted Thrones.
Ooh, yeah.
I was happy mostly for you, Bubba, when the throne got disintegrated, because all along you said there'd be no throne. So even though you're wrong about Cersei making it to episode 6, you were right about what you've been predicting for years and years, that there would be no throne. So my happiness for you outweighed my happiness for the episode.
So 7, that's relatively low, but a C grade here in the United States schooling system. Catfish, what did you miss? What could have brought this up to an 8, 9, or 10 for you?
There were some really weird things that didn't make sense for me. I'm trying to figure out what Grey Worm's plan was. Like, if he was just going to leave and peace out, like, why not take John with him and burn him on the way out? That didn't make sense to me. I don't know. I'm kind of with Mork, where there was a lot of, you know, before the big battle, when people were sitting around and talking, I thought that was a beautiful episode, and it really meant a lot. But there seemed to be a lot of just, like Mork said, we had the denouement, and then we had like 45 minutes after the denouement. I was waiting to see if Brienne was going to write like another 12 pages about Jaime.
Yeah, she just never stopped writing. She's just crying and writing.
Yeah, she forgot to mention that he took Sir Brienne's virginity. You would have thought she would have put that in the book.
All right, okay. We are going to go in. We're going to go over this episode in depth. We're going to do it live. We're going to go for a while. But now it's my turn to talk about the rankings. And I want to say that I watched this episode with my usual crew. And my usual crew includes 2 college students. And 1 college student, 30 minutes into the episode, it's still John and Tyrion talking in Tyrion's cell. And he was just getting incredibly frustrated. He's like, what's all this talking? What's all this talking? In the whole episode, he was just like, he hated it. After it was over, he goes, that was pointless. Where were the surprises? I tuned to Game of Thrones for murders, intrigue, backstabbing, action. And this episode didn't have any of it. And this college,
I mean, it had a front stabbing.
It sure did. But he was incredibly frustrated. On the other end was a woman, and she liked pretty much most of it, except she didn't like what happened to Jon Snow. And then now it's time to get to my ranking. So that was my viewing experience, only to say that I honestly think I'm going to give this 10 double Ds out of 10.
Oh, yeah, double Ds.
Double Ds.
Yeah?
Daenerys dead. Daenerys is dead. Because I was listening to somebody constantly, you know, I had a director's or an audience commentary going while I was watching it. A part of me was like, ugh, you know, I can see that people would have trouble with it. But to me, for Jon Snow to do these big momentous things that he's going to do, I swore to my queen, I swore to my king, you know, too honest to the fault. For him to do the equivalent that Jaime Lannister did, it is going to take forever for him to reach this point. It literally took the destruction and massacre at King's Landing. And then that wasn't enough. He's still tormented, and he knew what he needed to do. Tyrion, for, you know, having a long talk, getting him to that point. I went with it. I accepted it. I liked. This was the bittersweet ending that George Martin has been promising me for so long. So I kind of knew I shouldn't expect an Avengers-type ending. And so this was the bittersweet ending. I think it is bittersweet. I think this is...
Yeah, but this isn't what he's been promising.
Well, he's certainly been promising books that aren't coming. So, listeners, those are our feelings. Everybody's feelings are welcome here on the Joffrey of Podcast. I want to say I had another person reach out to me on Twitter this week who was a loyal listener. They said they've started on the very first podcast, and they were so frustrated that I enjoyed Season 8 and that I was down with Season 8. And I kind of wanted to write back to them and say, you know, I'm not making it up. I am actually enjoying it. Nothing this season, and I know so many things have driven people crazy, nothing this season has come close to my frustration. The White Hunt. Let's capture a zombie, a white, and bring it to Cersei to convince her to be good. That, in Season 7, just drove me crazy, and if you want to listen to me be tough on the show, go listen to those. For whatever reason, I rode with this season. It wasn't perfect in a lot of ways, but this ending did give me the sense of closure I wanted from an ending. 10 out of 10 from me. That's my rankings.
So are you going to take your name off of that list you started of, remember the list you started of people who want Season 8 completely redone?
Hold on. Yeah, we're going to get to that. So listeners, this is the Joffrey podcast. We've been talking about His Grace's return for so long. And certainly if you're upset like we are that they didn't bring His Grace back for a more on-camera role, he had a big part in this season that we'll talk about in our wrap-up episode. And I want to give a couple things before we dive deeper into the episode, just real quickly. That is that if you're one of these people who were upset with Season 8 and the rush pace of the season, and you want to cancel your reservation to Con of Thrones, we'll take your hotel room. Like, we don't have a hotel room, Catfish and I, when we attended July. We need a deal. And so if you're just trying to get rid of this hotel room because of what they did to Khaleesi, reach out to us at DoublePHQ on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We've only do these podcasts because we've had been blessed with a true audience of double L's.
Double L's?
That's what we call loyal listeners, guys. Come on.
Oh, I forgot already.
And so they've been kind enough to give us reviews where they download the podcast. We have 3 new iTunes reviews. We have reviews I found online this week from a thing called CastBox. We're going to read through them real quick. We're going to do some other housekeeping right at the top. And then I promise we're going to get into this episode, which I know is bringing the feelings for people. I'll go start us off with the first review from the USA iTunes store. It's by Eason Designs, and it's a 5-star review, and the title of the review is Double L.
Double L.
Eason Designs didn't write what that is. I'm very confused. Eason Design wrote, "I love this show. All hail the Joff. I've been listening for a while. I enjoy the informed commentary, running jokes, and always great for surprising actual LOLs or surprised guffaws. Thanks for keeping our true king alive in our hearts and minds." Oh, thank you so much, Eason Designs.
All right. Mork's going to read the next one from Germany.
Absolutely. Germany iTunes, here we go. Greatest podcast there is and ever will be. 5 stars.
Yeah.
Rafael Raj Kumar.
Now, I'm going to give the stage direction here. It says, in parentheses, it says, stage direction, please read with strong German accents since I am a triple P.
Triple P?
Yeah. Outlandish loyal listener. And he says, the out is silent. So to me, that sounds like it's a triple L, but it must be the German translation that doesn't make any sense.
Probably.
Okay.
So he's going to read it in German.
Okay, let's hear it.
He's the greatest podcast there is and ever will be. Nobody's able to capture the fascinating story of the most competent and humble leader in the real and or fictional world history better than the dynamic duo, Double D.
Double D?
yes, the dynamic duo, Bubba, German for funny beer face, and Catfish, German for sexy nasal voice.
Hey!
Dankeschön, Gesundheit, Divine Joffrey and his two double M's.
Double M's?
Mundane mouthpieces.
Ouch!
Mundane?
Ouch!
Marvelous. Marvelous.
Thank you.
Mouth.
Thank you so
All
much.
Right. And I'm going to read from the Australia iTunes. It says, the Iron Throne of Podcasts.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
A horrible accent. 5 stars by MDV.
Just been melted by a dragon.
The podcast is by far the best of the Game of Thrones podcasts out there. There's no trash talk, crass language, boring in jokes, and useless banter. Wait a minute.
He must,
he's talking, must be talking about another podcast.
Yeah, it gets worse.
No
keep going.
Bombs, and I'm like, et cetera. Yes. Yes, that's his podcast. Easy to listen to and nerdily funny. Bub and Catfish should be on the Iron Throne. And I think by that they meant like – like
burned alive.
No, having been stuck on, you know, like on the edges, like impaled on some of the thrones. I think that's what MDV meant.
We got a couple of reviews from something called CastBox. We got something from Conrad C., who writes, this is the best podcast for Game of Thrones. Thank you so much, Conrad.
We don't know what CastBox is, but it's a great review.
Right, and Papyrus on CastBox says, OMG, I love these podcasts.
Thank you so much. All of you guys are joining our Season 8 Survivors. We've been reading them every week of Season 8. We're going to go real quickly through the Season 8 Survivors. We've got Joel Lizzio.
Yeah, Joel Lizzio.
And
we've got KDK7.
F-U-C.
Miss Andy.
Joe Bear Squares.
Papa Coach 25.
At Mopey Moperson.
Yeah.
Kamal Abdo at Yoda 6K.
At Bailey on 8.
Bill Kava.
John Wambacher at Sundial Framing, where you get all of your sundials framed.
Oh, and a good old loyal listener, Court at Gendive.
We've got PF Wrench at PF Wrench 1.
Sarah C's at Sarah Shelton 2.
I don't know what's at. I don't know what's 1.
Robert Gill at MagnusGrill.com.
Chip Mims at CytoWolf23. Chip has some onions.
Yes, he does. Michael B. Sorden at Lord of Sword 94. Well, that rhymes out well.
Because you guys have been so great to give us written reviews, we're going to be giving away prizes as we go through this podcast. And
yes.
And we're going to – all our Season 8 survivors are eligible to win. It's very exciting. But one thing that – we've got to do is we've been yammering too long. We've given you thoughts of our ideas. Let's go ahead and get into the episode. Of course, we always talk about the credits, and sure enough, the King's Landing animation in the credits, it's been destroyed, man. It was awesome. I loved seeing it so darn blown up.
Oh, man, it was so good. It gave the opening just that little extra ingredient it needed.
And then we begin with this really slow pace, and no music. That was another interesting part of it. This is almost without any score as Tyrion walks through the wreckage. This is resetting the devastation, the terribleness that happened last week. How did you guys feel? How do you think the show wants us to feel as we see Tyrion and then Jon and Davos? And sure enough, the PO'd Grey Worm as they see this carnage. What do you think the show is trying to tell us? I mean, we see people walking through with burned bodies trying to survive, people crying.
I mean, I feel like it's trying to tell us what it already told us a lot last week.
Yeah, I mean, it's
we already saw all this.
It's reminding us that the place was completely destroyed by fire, and there was the only thing left over was ashes and blood. It was intense, you know. It was really intense. I think we were all sort of waiting to see what exactly Jon and Tyrion and Arya were going to do. It took us a little while to get there, but it was
a little.
Well, let's talk about their first kind of real tense point in the episode. They come upon people who are, John and Davos do, excuse me, soldiers who've been defeated. They're down on their knees. They don't have any weapons. And Grey Worm's going to follow his queen's commands a bit like a robot. We love Grey Worm. We don't want him to kill these people who are defeated. And yet, he's got to follow his queen's words. The fact that this Unsullied point their spears at John, Davos, and the Northmen, this is just brutal. What did you guys think? Did you like that moment? I actually liked it a lot, even though I like Grey Worm, and it pains me to see him like this.
I mean, I thought it was a cool moment, but I also was a little – I felt I was a little, I don't know, disappointed or surprised that John would have let these guys all just get their throats slit. He's been a pretty honorable guy, I mean, to his and everyone else's detriment throughout. And maybe it was just he was so shell-shocked that he let it go. But I was a little surprised at that. And the other thing I was thinking about, I don't know about you guys, but this is the first time we've really seen the Unsullied kind of go rogue a little bit. And maybe it would have been cool to see that, you know, at some point before this, because otherwise we really had just seen them as automatons. And now, I mean, Grey Worm, he's debating with John, he's arguing with them, he's going to do what he's going to do. But it still felt like he was motivated by seeing Missandei die, you know, a couple weeks ago.
Catfish, what did you think about this moment? You're the toughest critic.
I felt it was a big moment. I mean, I felt kind of like Mork did, where it's like, John's just gonna let this happen. And I guess it's true that he's shell shocked, but I can buy your theory that it just took him so long to see all this. But the problem is, we saw him see this last episode too. You know, he didn't want to continue the fight. He told people to stop fighting, and it just seems like if he's going to be so dumb and honorable, he should be consistent.
Well, we have people in the chat. Shayna Mason said Grey Worm just didn't make sense in this episode. Holly Huntpants @HollyHunt on Twitter. She wrote, Grey Worm broke after Missandei dies. And that's sad to see, isn't it? Oh, my goodness gracious. And she was actually shocked that I gave it such a high score. Oh, my goodness gracious. And so,
what do you think about this, Bubba?
I thought it was tense. I thought it was successful. Once again, like last week's episode, I gave last week's episode a really high review, even though I didn't want to see the things that were happening. I want our heroes to do good. I kept using the word tragedy, probably too much to describe what happened last week and what happened to Daenerys. And seeing what happened to Grey Worm, to me it feels like a tragedy, but it also feels kind of real. This is war is hell. This is one of the messages that maybe the show and the books give us mixed messages on, because it's wonderful to win a battle, and when we defeat Ramsay in the Battle of the Bastards, it's great. But so many people do die, and so I enjoyed the moment.
Since we kind of, this may be a good time to talk about it, because what I want to talk about isn't really in the episode, and we thought it might be. You know, we had a good conversation with some loyal listeners over Twitter, because I was so thought that what Daenerys did last week was just so out of character and weird, and someone convinced me that a good reason would have been, well, she realized she had to rule through fear. And I said, well, that might make sense, but unfortunately, we had no idea what her real feelings were, because they didn't, right before she did that, when she was crying, and again, that could have been, I could have been sold, okay, she was crying because she realized what she had to do, but we didn't see her after she started, so we don't know her true feelings, and we actually didn't find out her true feelings here. In other words, what people tried to convince me of is that she did it because she realized she had to rule through fear. That didn't really get sold to me here, so I'm still left with the feeling that this was poorly – Daenerys's insane move was poorly handled and not well telegraphed.
I completely understand. Sorry, Mork, you were saying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was going to say it was telegraphed, but it just wasn't really fleshed out. I mean, it was just there. And, you know, and I don't know how far back we want to go with this. I don't know how much time we want to spend on the bells. But at the point the bells were ringing, she had incinerated the Iron Fleet and the Golden Company and half of, you know, all the battlements with all the scorpions. So if people weren't afraid at that moment, I mean, it was she had certainly made a pretty good first impression.
Let's not relitigate the bells. Let's focus on this episode for a bit. Tyrion goes down. He wants to see if his siblings have survived. I assume he was trying to make his way to that cove to see if the boat was there. And he comes across the rubble and he digs out his dead siblings. This is one sibling he loved beyond words can measure. The other sibling he had trouble with and tried to have him killed multiple times. Sorry, I'm just trying to say, what did you think of this emotional moment, seeing the dead Lannisters and Tyrion looking at him? It's tough to see, isn't it?
Well, I was just trying to figure out how much Tyrion got when he pawned Jaime's hand.
Do you think he kept it with him? I mean, it's a symbol of his brother. I mean, this is terrible.
I don't know. It probably weighs as much as he does, so it would be tough for him to drag it around. It is a good back scratcher.
I was surprised he didn't wear it for his new Hand of the King badge.
Oh, right. That'd be great. Here's a Hand of the King slayer.
Catfish, let's be honest, you are an actor. What is it like when you have to be like Peter Dinklage is here, selling emotion, there's no lines, you know they're not really dead, but you've got to get across how much they mean to you?
I mean, it's just a kind of a thing where, like, you just need to, like, you need to think in your head, and you got to, like, you know, just put some extra cheese on it.
Man, oh man, oh man. I think he did pretty well. He made me feel for evil Uncle Tyrion and these terrible Lannisters. Back outside the city, we see Arya walking through the devastation. She sees Jon going up through the Dothraki. Jon is marching up to the city. And Kit Harington, he has the same kind of thing Peter Dinklage has. He's got to convey all these things without any dialogue. What's going across his face? Is he a Mopey Moberson? Does he get it across? He's walking up the stairs, and who flies in? The queen.
Yeah, I got a question, though. Before he sees the queen, who does he see?
He sees Grey Worm again.
Yeah. Well, was he taking a leisurely stroll around? Last he left, Grey Worm still had some work to do, and Grey Worm beat him there.
He was going to see if there was any part of the city that hadn't been burned so he could not feel so terrible about what happened. I think
it's also like the first time that Jon's been in King's Landing really on his own. So he got lost. You know, it was Spinal Tap. He was saying,
that's good. That's good.
Hello, Cleveland.
This, I know a lot of people who love logic. When you look at the size specifically of the Unsullied, you're like, how are this many Unsullied still alive? And I certainly, my logic brain doesn't make any sense that this many Unsullied are still alive. Dothraki are still alive. But it's a very powerful visual to see those many of Daenerys' followers standing there worshiping.
Well,
it's a beautiful shot. It's beautiful to look at.
There were a bunch of them that were missing, like the entire, like, four middle rows of them were missing.
Yes, letters F through H were missing.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a wide space for Jon to walk through. My question here is, and I don't know how it would have come out here, but you never see Jon talk to Daenerys like you think he would. Try to sort of reason with her.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, like, he never says, it feels like he would say to her, like, that was wrong. You shouldn't have done that. Like, why were these innocent people killed? Like, in other words, if he's kind of defending her, he never even tries to, like, convince her. The first time he really has a conversation with her, he ends up throwing a fit and a knife.
Yeah, it was a little rush. I mean, we're skipping ahead from Tyrion. Tyrion resigned, and
yeah. Well, hold on, Mork. If it's okay, let's not even go to there. And John, what I would say, what the show's trying to tell me, or the way I'm interpreting what the show is telling me, is that John is trapped between doing what he knows he should do and what is right, and staying true to his word. Staying true to his word is so much a part of who he is. It's who his father, quote-unquote father, Ned Stark, taught into him. It's who he is. It's to go against his identity to question Daenerys. And Daenerys is giving a speech to knock it out of the park. She's speaking at the Republican National Convention.
But isn't there an interim step between not questioning someone and knifing them in the belly?
I think, to be honest, I think the massacre at King's Landing killed a lot of innocent people and killed the middle step. That's what I would assume. But you know what?
The middle step happens in this episode. He defends her in this episode and then knifes her. And so what I'm saying is there's an interim period in that.
Yeah, but the middle step is what you're talking about. What he does is rooted in who he is, about staying true to your word, about I swore my allegiance to her. Am I going to break my word? Am I going to break my vow? That's not who John is. Or John has always been that person until today in some ways.
Right. I mean, what I'm saying is I think and this episode shows it once again that he's just dumb enough and honorable enough to try to talk to her.
Let's hold off and talk about that moment when we get to
all
it.
Right.
Because, and let me say, it's natural that we're jumping all over the place in the beginning part of the episode, because this took up so much of the opening episode. I saw an article today. I have to be honest. I don't agree with it. But it said Game of Thrones is punishing fans for loving the characters. So, like, we love Jaime. He had a redemption arc. But, oh, wait, no, he still loves his sister who's pregnant with his child. Oh, so take that, fans. Here, we love Daenerys. But, oh, wait, Daenerys let her passion and her fury kind of get the better of her. Oh, take that, fans. I don't agree with it. But that is something I think a lot of people are processing. Daenerys is giving this speech, and what's so funny is it maybe it's done poorly, maybe people don't like it, but to me, this speech she gives is like the fine line between, hey, we're going to break the wheel, and hey, we're going to just smash everybody. When she says we're going to liberate people from the north, from Winterfell to Dorne, we're going to go to Slaver's Bay, we're going to go back to Carth. She mentions Carth. She mentioned all these places. And it's scary what she's thinking, what she's feeling, and I thought she delivered it great. I thought it was great too.
I mean, I thought she was phenomenal in that moment. And
Catfish signed up. He enlisted.
I was all in.
He came dangerously and almost unsanitarily close to becoming an Unsullied.
I did. I was gonna self unsully.
Oh no, self unsully. So Mork, you mentioned it. Tyrion comes out, and he doesn't just remove his pin; he throws it away.
Right.
He's signing his own death warrant. Do we respect that more than maybe Catfish respects what George is doing? I'm sorry, what John is doing. What Catfish respects more than what John is doing, the fact that Tyrion's just like, okay, I'm outie. F this.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's also completely – I mean, everyone who is in King's Landing was completely, you know, beaten into the ground either by being burnt to death or by witnessing Danny do what she did. And so I think, you know, Jon's exhausted. I think Tyrion is exhausted, and he knows it. He knows Varys is right, as he mentions, and you know, shout out.
It does show, though, and I can believe it. It doesn't really bother me, but it shows a sense of quit in Tyrion that we don't expect from the entirety of his life. He's never quit. So this, he is completely beaten down, because otherwise he would go along with the flow and then do something about it. That would really be the brave thing. This is the dumb Jon Snow type thing for him to do, is to make some big empty statement that's going to lead to his death and is not going to improve any other person's situation one bit.
Well, Tyrion,
but I say I believe it. I mean, he's But still, there's been a few things that I've been personally unhappy with on the show, and that's one is Tyrion was my favorite character, and he kind of got shunted to the side, and he's done a lot of dumb things this year, and maybe that's partially also because of, you know, that he had love for Daenerys too, and so maybe you can kind of see that as a subtext that he was kind of blinded by his love, as he says, what is his unrequited love? What did he say it was?
Less successful.
Yeah, less successful. So I felt for him bad. I felt for him there because I was like, oh, I was like, there's so many ways that Tyrion is like Bubba. So
edit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. So the one other thing that I've been dissatisfied in the show, and I know a lot of people, other people are, have, and this is just kind of an aside, is that they really have passed the level of the books, and they have kind of dealt with his magic as little as they've had to. I mean, the fact that Arya basically the last time we saw her use her face trick was what, episode 1 of season 7?
That's exactly right, when she redid Walder.
Right.
Yeah, so that's also weird. I mean, you know, they've abandoned a lot of the magical parts for the other stuff, but that's all right. We are talking about the show as a whole, and so that's one of my disappointments for it. Being a fantasy fan, you know, don't be embarrassed by the fantasy parts.
All right. They have a dragon in every episode since.
Yeah,
then.
But dragons are cool.
Okay.
All right, guys. Tyrion does his move. He is standing on principle and nothing else. And Grey Worm is.
That's why I could see him.
Hey now. He's teeny. So Grey Worm escorts him away. Daenerys looks at Jon for a minute, and you suddenly think, has she found out about how Jon kind of pulled up and wasn't fighting as hard as he should have? But she leaves him. She's escorted away. John's there at the...
I wouldn't have had to burn half the city to death if you didn't stop killing them.
But then John is there. He's watching Daenerys walk in towards the Red Keep. And who comes up but Arya? She sneaks up on everybody. Suddenly she's equal with him. And so many people didn't see Arya killing the Night King before this season. They saw Arya killing Cersei. They saw, after last week's episode, Arya putting on a face and killing Daenerys. But John tells her to leave, and it seems like Arya does. What do you think of this move? Is this right? How do you feel? Should John have said, Arya, go do it?
No, I think that was him basically saying, get out of here because I'm going to kill her and you need to be as far away from this place as possible.
Oh, see, I didn't get that. I thought that she was – I thought he wasn't at that point yet and he should have listened to her. Like, get out. He was so – I mean, that's the one thing that was – that I thought was good. The tension was, you're like, this – this himbo here, Jon Snow, he probably doesn't realize how close he is to death.
Every moment he doesn't. But I as silly as it is, he tells Arya to wait outside the city gates. Arya's looking at Jon. She's saying she knows knows who you are, who you really are. You'll always be a threat to her. She's telling him the danger.
Also, there are no more gates. They've all been destroyed. Where am I supposed to wait?
Well, you see a bunch of holes. You're like, is this a gate? Where do you think Arya is?
I don't know. It sort of felt like our pal Dean Whitsitt says that, you know, maybe there was bacon in this scene, but there was not pepperoni. So it was cool to see them, but they just sort of touched on something, and then it just kept going. And that was a lot of what... I mean, really, the whole episode felt like.
I can't blame Arya for essentially being done with her job as far as the show goes after killing the Night King. I mean, that's pretty big. And so I guess as a showrunner, you want to say, or even a someone writing the books, well, I don't want Arya to kill everybody, even though I think we did want Arya to kill everybody, but to mix it up and to make it exciting. But I felt like there was a strange shift in Arya after killing the Night King, right? I mean, the Hound told her to leave, and she was like, okay, I'll do that. And then Jon tells her to leave, and she's like, okay, I'll do that. But I didn't see that shift in her. I mean, it's funny. By the end of the episode, you see she's like that. It does feel like she's had a shift, in that she's like, I need to find someplace new. This is tired. This whole place is tired. But I didn't kind of see that shift in her. I guess you can say that when she said okay to the Hound, I'll leave. I didn't buy it, but I guess that's where it was.
Okay, I did buy it. I want to get to some of our wonderful double L's who are leaving comments here on YouTube. Jake Pontzner said he was getting a lot of Star Wars vibes from this, and what he wrote was, Tyrion is Obi-Wan, trying to convince Jon, a.k.a. Luke, that Danny, Vader, can't be turned back to the light side of the Force. Jon confronts Danny, and Danny/Vader tries to convince him, Luke, join me, and together we rule. And so that's the feeling he was getting. On the sad side of things, our good double L, Michael Kikili, he just wrote, so disappointed, hold me. Oh. Then Jake, once again, wrote, Danny could have taken Arya hostage to ensure that Sansa stayed loyal to the throne. So Arya was in great danger. It was smart of Jon to tell her to get out. Great comments. Keep them coming, people. I'm trying to keep up with them here on YouTube. We've got Catfish looking at Facebook. We're looking at Twitter. We're trying to cover all your live comments as we go through this.
Oh, yeah.
We're 23 minutes into the episode. Jon Snow goes to see Tyrion, and this was the scene that, like I said, I was watching with a college-age friend who just really was getting impatient with this scene of Tyrion trying to get through to Jon. These two had a great conversation in the very first episode where, you know, never forget who you are, Jon Snow. The world won't let you forget it. Wear it like a badge of honor. And now Tyrion, he has hashtag no regrets. He's like, yeah, I did treason, and it was right. And theoretically, I don't know if Jon needed this speech or not, and it is a long speech, But John, he got through to John based on what's going to happen in the next scene. Any thoughts, you guys, on this specific Jon Snow Tyrion scene?
I mean, I felt like that my frustration kind of mushroomed during this scene too, because you know, it's funny, we had two big scenes today, the talking scenes with Tyrion. I thought like both of them were not powerful. They just didn't, it just didn't capture me like other scenes that we've seen before, to the Tyrion and Jaime scenes together, you know, when one was captured and then the other one was captured. It for some reason, the scenes didn't have the snap. They felt like they were overwritten, especially the Tyrion second scene to me. So I don't know. I just wasn't vibing on it tonight.
Mork, how did you feel about this first Tyrion and Jon scene in Tyrion's cell?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Catfish to a certain extent. And part of it, I think, is we've all been, for many different reasons, pretty frustrated with some of what Jon has done and some of what he hasn't done throughout the course of his story. And so, you know, I don't think there was anything really new that Tyrion was saying that had to be that had to be done. And
yeah, I mean, considering how we've rushed through this series, this season,
yeah,
the two Tyrion speaking scenes tonight were long and repetitive.
Jon is trying to say to Tyrion, but the war's over now. He's almost doing like what Jaime was doing to Olenna Tyrell, where he's like, you know, once the wars are over, Cersei's reign will be peaceful. Now, the thing is I don't know if Jon believes these things he's saying or if they're things he has to say to kind of make it right in his head. Tyrion lists all the things Daenerys did. You know, she fried everybody in Astapor, but they were slavers. They were evil. She crucified all the masters in Meereen, but yes, they were evil. And he's kind of doing the work that the show, some of the fans, he's trying to point out, you know, she loves killing. And Jon Snow, God bless him, is it love? A part of him still has to love Daenerys, especially because when he kills her, he's crying. This is a tragedy for him too. Our boy Jon Snow, he knows nothing, but he's been in love twice and both have ended in death. Both loves have ended with him on the opposite side of his love. Oh.
Was there any, and just this is a quick question, but the whole mythology of the dude with the flaming sword who stabbed his wife through the heart to do some kind of a big thing, did that line up at all with this in the books? Isn't there, there's like the big Azazor?
Yeah, I was going to see how bad Catfish wanted to swing and miss at this.
I'm happy just to sit here and listen to the two of you talk about Azor Ahai.
Okay, so this is a book's prophecy that they kind of sort of talked about, the prince who was promised, and then back in season 7, Missandei was like, well, it might be princess who was promised. Yes, there are lots of kind of versions of this, from Azor Ahai to the prince who was promised, but that they would be reborn amongst salt and smoke. Jon was theoretically reborn among salt and smoke. When what Melisandre was burning his hair right, there were tears when people were stabbing him, when people saw him. And so Jon could be that principle. Maybe the dragon is Lightbringer. I know that's what somebody watching here thought. The dragon represented Lightbringer as it, you know, after he stabbed Daenerys, suddenly he had this thing to, you know, take out the evil thing, possibly the, you know, the ring, one ring of power. Jon Snow leaves Tyrion's cell. He's going to walk to the throne room. He sees this big pile of snow, and it shakes the snow off, and it's Drogon. Oh,
ooh.
Did you guys not? I mean, you know, some people can have problems with this episode, but was that a great moment when Drogon just shook that snow off?
That was an awesome moment, and it's funny. I realized after Jon left that's the only protection Daenerys has, but the only protection she needs.
Yeah.
Right. I would love to have seen what Drogon would have done, because Drogon checks out Jon and then's like, he's cool, and then goes back to sleep. I would have loved to have seen what Drogon would have done if it was Arya walking, even wearing somebody else, you know, like wearing a unsullied face and an unsullied costume, how Drogon would have done. Jon walks through into the throne room. It's in much worse shape than when Daenerys and Bran had the vision of it before. You know, Daenerys had a vision of this in season 2. The showrunners knew this room was being destroyed in season 2. I think they actually knew an awful lot of George's plan from very early on in the beginning. But here is the prophecy or the vision revealed from the House of the Undying, season 2, episode 10. The throne room is destroyed. In that In that episode, Daenerys got close to the throne, but she didn't touch it. I kept wondering what's going to happen. She gets up, she touches it, but Daenerys never sits the Iron Throne. What were your guys' thoughts on this scene as a whole before the big stab moment? Daenerys walking in and seeing the seat of her family, the throne her family built. How did you guys feel about that?
I mean, I thought it was cool. There she is, getting what she wants. To me, I didn't think of her from her point of view. Her point of view was probably, this is glorious. My point of view would have been, God, this place has turned into a real dump. Like, do I want to be the king of this place or the queen of this place? It's a real shithole.
Sort of fall apart. One thing actually that I thought was incredibly cool, and sorry to take us back, but when she got off of Drogon and was walking to give that speech, and there was that shot of her.
Oh yeah, with the dragon wings behind her.
That was amazing. I thought that was just incredibly cool. Seeing her in there, it's tough because there's no, you know, when it was the prophecy and the House of the Undying and all that, you know, there's this. At that point, the Iron Throne was something that people, you know, really wanted and cared about, and it was going to change things. And at this point, it was just kind of like, this sucks. You know, I mean, like, this is for everyone, for Daenerys, yeah, but for everyone else, it was a pretty painful, trophy ceremony.
Right. Kind of an empty win, if you will.
A little bit, yeah. She truly was the Queen of the Ashes.
When she turns around, she's at the Iron Throne. She's just touched it. When she turns around and she sees Jon, she actually has a smile come to her face. And so she thinks she's won. She thinks, yes, things have happened. The people, and I almost want to say, I've seen some military strategists say this was a smart move. She was like, Cersei was using these people against me. She was using these innocent people against me. And so she says it was necessary.
I still fried them. I still fried these people.
Well,
they were accomplices.
Well, John is yelling at her. Children burn. Little children burn. But he just can't break her. She says, I tried to make peace with Cersei, and let's give her her due. She did try to make peace with Cersei multiple times. But, of course, it meant Cersei stepping down, and Cersei was never going to do it.
So this is a question for both of you guys. So last week, she tries to kiss Jon. Jon does not kiss his aunt back, and she's like, fine, it'll be through fear. And so at that moment, she knows that Jon, you know, like, Jon doesn't love her anymore, or he's not going to act on it. So he's no longer really worth anything to her. So why doesn't she just roast him and then send Drogon to go pick up Dario?
Well, because she's... Oh, yeah. She still loves him. And she's like, she's probably thinking in her head. She's kind of playing it cool. But in her head, she's thinking, yeah, he's come crawling back. Now that he sees my power, he comes crawling back. Right. He wants a little bit of taste of anti-tea.
I'm going to disagree with Catfish's take on this.
What? You don't think that she's like, he's got to have anti-Targaryen?
I'm saying those thoughts, I didn't see them playing across her face. I think it's possible that Daenerys has achieved so many miracles. Tyrion said just a couple episodes ago, well, you know, she walked into a blazing fire and came out with dragons. Why shouldn't she believe in miracles? She sees what she's done as a miracle. She's freed these people from tyranny. And so she doesn't... John is somebody who's going to see it.
And mortality.
She's going to see, is like, John, you're going to see it. You know, you're going to see it. I've broken the wheel. I've succeeded. She's on top of the world. She's going to see everything through rose-colored glasses, through fire-colored glasses, because she's on top of the world. And John, I think he does still love her, and she still loves him. So why not, you know, why not roast him? He doesn't have a dragon anymore that can threaten you.
Right, a kiss before dying.
Oh, how sad. But did you guys know when they went into the embrace that he would do it? That he would stab her with his little dirk, it looks like?
I did it because I thought he would continue his stupid Snow, like, this is a change for him. Like, you would have thought that he'd be like, all right, I'm going to kiss her and then I'll leave, and then honorably I will announce my intentions to challenge her. Like,
I will send her a letter saying that I will challenge.
Formal proposal.
I just, because he was crying, I thought that something, you know, something might be
brewing.
Yes,
I have to tell you, my true enjoyment of this episode was Ms. Catfish.
Oh yes,
who was watching with us,
throwing olives at the screen.
Yeah, when she said, she literally, when John was like, I'm sorry, and kissing, she said, Jon Snow is a pussy. And then they started kissing, and she's like, I'm leaving. And then after he stabbed her, she said, oh, yeah.
Well, once again, all opinions are valid here. Everybody has a great point. We love all our double L's, even when somebody gets stabbed and they go, oh, yeah. I want to go back out to the YouTube.
Well, I would hope you'd enjoy stabbing if you like this show.
I want to go back out to the YouTube chat. Matt Savage wrote, I wanted Daenerys to get cut by the Iron Throne as a symbol of her not deserving the power, like her dad was called King Scab. That's a story from the books where he cut himself on the throne so much. That is a good idea, Matt. I think that would have been good, but they're trying to set us up for this heartbreaking, they want it to be heartbreaking moment where Jon kills his queen. And after he killed her, of course, who came up but her kid? Ooh, Drogon. This was another tense moment that I thought had an interesting twist. What did you guys think about Drogon's reaction to his mom dying?
What did you think was the interesting twist?
That Drogon didn't try to roast Jon. I thought Drogon might roast Daenerys. And, you know, she's fire and blood. She's a Targaryen. She might want to die, you know, by being roasted.
Well,
this
she
kind
could
of
actually
stuff.
Maybe she could be resuscitated. I was actually a little surprised he didn't go. I mean, I know he's attached to Daenerys, but, you know, I thought there was a possibility he would join. He would let Jon ride him. But instead, it seemed like he was more interested in a barbecue. Like, he just wanted to, like, he's like, where's the flaming pineapple? I got it right here.
Yeah. Once again, I was very tense. You didn't know what Drogon was going to do. But at a certain point, you know, because Drogon is really going through the seven stages of dragon grief. And he's, you know, Drogon's sniffling her. He's trying to roll her over, trying to get her to wake up. And then
he's hamming it up a little bit.
Right. And then Drogon unleashes his true anger on the throne, as if it knows it was the throne that killed Daenerys, not Jon. I have always said that there wasn't going to be a throne. I've been wrong on so many, 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 many predictions, but this is one I've been saying forever. And so,
what do you think is happening though right now? He's flying around with her. Is it like a Norman Bates situation where?
Well, he had to have landed somewhere, right? Unless Jon admitted to knifing her. I mean, if I was Jon, I wouldn't have said anything. I'd be like, I don't know what happened. Drogon took her away, and I don't know. I guess she's coming back.
Yeah, that's what I thought Jon should say to the Unsullied. You know, when they questioned him, he'd be like, "Well, she took off on Drogon. She'll be back in a bit, I guess." Until that point, she said, "Release Tyrion, and I'm going to go north."
Right. Yeah. Or Jon could have said, you know, to Grey Worm, "Hey, you know, Drogon thinks you guys are, you guys are pretty lame, and couldn't take him in a fight." And try to get them to go at each other.
Oh, nice, nice. Uh-huh. Try to set up a
strategy.
Did you guys like the Iron Throne getting melted? Somebody in our YouTube chat saying dragons can't melt steel like that. It's already been roasted. Drogon took it to a new level.
Someone said on Twitter that dragons are smart, so that means they can do anything.
True.
Well, who would sit the – who instead of who will sit the Iron Throne, who's going to sit the molten spot?
Well, I mean, the answer to that brings up my real frustrations with the end of this. So are we about ready to do the time shift, which was noticed by Mork when he said, oh, my God, that this Tyrion's fake beard is like 3 inches longer.
They brought him the wrong beard.
Hey, why don't we take a break real quick to give out a prize to a double L?
A double L?
A loyal listener. All right, okay. Listeners, we are going to do this. If you are longtime double L's, triple L's, longtime loyal listeners, you know that occasionally we've gone to our magical dice to help us straighten out because we have so many people entered into this contest. So every week I've been saying our season 8 survivors from week 1, week 2, week 3, week 4, week 5, and tonight we read our season 8 survivors. So what we're going to do is there 6 episodes that puts people in 6 columns. I'm going to roll a dice to figure out the first part of it, which column is going to be the first lucky winner. Then Catfish and Mork are going to roll a dice to figure out which one of these wonderful loyal listeners is the number one champ. So here we go. I will roll the dice. Ooh, and I come up with 5. So that means one of our loyal listeners, who is a season 7 survivor of week 5, is going to win one of our prizes. Catfish, roll it. Let's see
season
who
8?
Wins.
Are we going to go season 7 or season 8?
You know what? I'm blathering. Season 8, week 5. Catfish, roll your dice. Let's see who wins.
It is number 6.
Ooh.
That's Carlos Segura. Carlos, you are officially
Carlos,
a winner.
Carlos.
Carlos, write to us at WPHQ on Twitter, on Instagram, or go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WPHQ, and we're going to give you one of our wonderful prizes. Thank you for being a double L. We're going to give away 2 more in this episode. We're going to give away some in our next podcast, a Game of Thrones wrap-up show, and then we'll actually be giving away some at Con of Thrones in July. So, okay, Catfish. Take us into the time jump. We see Tyrion, and he's being led out by Grey Worm in chains. Did you know where he was going? This was a total shock to me. He brings him to the Dragon Pit and the council of all the remaining noble houses of Westeros. What do you think?
I mean, even when it first started, it took me like a couple minutes to figure out what was going on. Because it was really weird. I literally thought when Mork made that comment, I was like, "Whoa, man! Whoever's doing the beards that day made a mistake." Because it doesn't. It's so much of it doesn't make sense, and I didn't like it. I mean, it almost felt like it was like somewhat like the writers. They just put a steak in a grinder, and then they just ended up with hamburger. Then they just threw it wherever they wanted.
Well, so Tyrion's been locked up. I assume all these lords and ladies have been in their part of the Westeros, and Jon Snow has been locked up. So, and Jon Snow and Tyrion have been, like mushrooms growing in a closet, a dark closet. And who's running King's Landing? Who's running Westeros? Is it the Unsullied? It's not the Dothraki. It was just kind of felt like it was a bit of a jump too far into the future. Maybe it was Ser Davos or something. But it was a little, just felt, yeah, too much of a jump for me. But Bubba,
I actually understand the jump you are, like what's going on. The one bit of this, and I actually like most of this scene, but one bit of this that I actually did like is that suddenly Grey Worm didn't suddenly become a politician. He's not suddenly making orders. He's still trying to follow orders. He's a soldier. He's a good soldier. He's a very upset soldier. He will not forgive what these traitors have done to his queen. But I did like...
Yeah, but he's still dealing like a... He is still dealing like a politician. In other words, he's let all these people in here. Apparently, he's willing to make some sort of deal for John's life. Don't tell me that's not a political thing. The old Grey Worm, we know, would have killed both of them and then just done whatever he wanted. Now, I guess he just wanted to leave, but I guess that's the deal we have to infer, right? That it's like, okay, you can leave unmolested. Go away, but you have to leave us Jon and Tyrion, when it seems to me that Grey Worm could have held on to, we'll leave and you won't have to have any more people die and we'll take whoever we have with us. Like, I don't see how the rest of Westeros has any power whatsoever to demand anything. And that Grey Worm would, how can you say Grey Worm's not a politician? He's giving up the person who killed his queen, the woman who freed him. That's like the worst political move ever.
Well, it's not a political move. He's like, okay, you told me to release him, I'll release him. That's not a political move. How is it political? You know, he's following orders.
It's a political move. Yeah. Following orders from who?
From this council. That's the point.
What? No, the point is, why he doesn't have to take any orders from this council.
Guess what? They he doesn't. That was ready. My point. That's right. He doesn't. That was my point. He doesn't have to.
And the point that he and so the fact that he is means he's being political rather than as a warrior. He would say, I'll take who I want. We'll fight you or we'll leave. But either way, I'm not letting go the person who killed my queen. That is it's to give up. Jon Snow makes no sense whatsoever.
All right, listeners, you write us, you tell us. We're getting loud, we're getting passionate, we care about this. Rah! Let us know. Real quickly, let's go through the council. Who are the quote-unquote noble family still? We have the three Starks, Arya, Bran, and Sansa. Next to Sansa, we have Brienne, her knight. I suppose Brienne might be representing the noble House of Tarth. We have Davos. And then next to Davos, we have Gendry, Lord of the Stormlands. I want to give a special shout out to a guy who I think looks great, and that's Little Robin Arryn. Did Little Robin Arryn grow up and look good or what?
He did look good.
He was great.
Until later, I was like, who the heck is this? And then I realized, because he was sitting next to our buddy, that it was Robin Arryn.
Right. Jon Royce, his right-hand man, he was there. We also saw...
Or left-hand man in this scene.
In this scene, that's true. We also have some characters that we're just going to have to, you know, hopefully go on to the wiki of Ice and Fire. The show will tell us after the show who's there. Uncle Edmure Tully's there. Sam is there, representing the Tarleys. We have the new Prince of Dorne. We have Yara. They're all gathered here for... What, once again, I consider them the politicians, and their jailer, who I guess gets a vote in this, Grey Worm, is there as well. What did you guys think? Was there anybody on the council you especially loved seeing? Did you like seeing Yara? Did you like seeing Edmure Tully? Who was your favorite?
I mean, of course you had to love Edmure getting smacked down. Because I thought for a second, are this really going to be allowed to happen? Just because he had the balls to stand up. And it was amazing that he got smacked down. Now, listen, there was somebody, though, but I think they saved it as a surprise for it. There was somebody who was not there who has a substantial bit of holdings and property.
That is true, yeah.
And that is our boy Bronn. He should have been there.
I don't know yet if he had his holdings or properties yet. Cersei had promised him some. Tyrion had promised him some. Cersei's dead. Tyrion's in jail. I don't know how Bronn's going to show up there and say, like, yeah, this is owed to me.
That's a good point. It's not until Tyrion gets loose for completely insane reasons that Bronn gets his holdings.
So, some people are still Team Daenerys. The Ironborn, Yara Greyjoy's like, I hate him. I swore to Daenerys, kill them all. Did she not see? Like, did she not walk through the city and see what happened? The queen is dead, Yara. Give it up.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was. I think it was just a way to give Arya a cool little moment at that place. But it felt. Did you think it was a little? You know, everyone basically there was the representative of their house, and the Starks had three people. Did you think that was weird at all?
I guess I didn't. I kind of understood it. I didn't think about it too much. I think things that happen in this decision confused people in the room I was watching and did give me a bit of pause. I should say that, once again, I had these people who, some of whom hated the episode, some who had trouble with it, but everybody, like you, Catfish, loved Uncle Edmure's nomination speech getting cut short.
Second favorite thing, however, was a nice nod to, like, modern sensibilities, where Samwell Tarly suggests a representative democracy, and the response he gets for that is also quite enjoyable.
Yeah, Jon Royce didn't like that at all. What did he say? Should my horse vote?
Yeah, I'll ask my horse, or... Yeah, that's our dogs too, and then I'll ask my horse. That was pretty.
Okay, so Tyrion makes his pitch for Bran, and
wait, hold on.
Oh well, sorry.
Let's make it more representative. And then he makes his pitch, and then he makes his pitch, and then he makes his pitch. Okay, now we can go on.
So you're saying this scene went too long. You had already said it had gone too long for you, but now that we're here talking about it, you didn't get convinced. I actually got spoiled, I guess you would say, because so many news outlets did stories about the odds in Vegas for who's going to sit on the Iron Throne. Bran's currently in the lead. Bran's currently on the lead. And that was before the season premiered, and it's still that way. And I was like, what? And so I kind of saw it coming, and I thought the show would have to do some work to convince me that Bran should be on the Iron Throne. I mean, heck, the show put Bran on the sidelines for all of season five. But somehow or another, I accepted it. I went, okay. And I almost saw how everybody else could accept it. What did you guys think about Bran's nomination ceremony? I almost even like when Tyrion's like, well, will you do it if we name you king? And Bran said, why do you think I came back for? I actually like that a lot.
No, that was awesome. I also would have felt a little harsh if I was the other people. It's like, we nominate a Stark to the throne, and then all of a sudden the rest of the Starks are like, we're going to stay our own independent nation. And of course the new king is okay with that.
Yeah.
I felt like Sansa, I mean, you know, she's grown so much. She's sort of the natural, she's the natural candidate. And I was,
Yeah, I thought she was the natural candidate too. I mean, it's sort of, her consolation prize was Queen of the North.
Right.
But still, I thought she'd be the best one to rule. I mean, you see how Bran rules. You guys figure everything out. I'm going to go flying around in a dragon. That's how I choose to be king. Thanks a lot, pal.
Well, look, whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. No, I mean, you were not surprised at all, Bubba. You saw this coming a mile away?
I'd seen those Vegas odds, and they never made sense to me. But honest to God, this week I suddenly saw another article about Bran still in the lead, according to Vegas, to sit the Iron Throne. And honestly, this week I thought, they've had all these scenes of Tyrion talking to Bran. Why did they have all these scenes of Tyrion talking to Bran? Why are they trying to build that connection when the characters never had it before? So they had Tyrion talk to Bran in after the battle and before the battle. And so suddenly I thought, oh, I get it. Tyrion's going to see Bran's positives, three-eyed Bran's positives, and he's going to pitch him. And so, yeah, sadly, maybe because I knew this was coming or suspected it might come, I actually went with it and kind of liked it.
I think it's certainly interesting, and it could be really cool. I think another thing that was sort of eating at me sort of during it, and I couldn't really put my finger on it until now, is it's like Tyrion's been locked up for 2 or 3 months. And hey, Tyrion, we're going to spring out of jail and tell us who should be king. You know, like it was sort of.
Yeah. Who's trusting the hand of Daenerys right now? I mean, that's completely crazy. I mean, they don't have Jon to tell him it. I mean, sorry. I mean, to me, the whole thing is weird. Like, I don't understand why, you know, this doesn't seem. This seems like a meeting of the council and also Grey Worm, who for some reason is letting the council set terms for him, which doesn't make any sense for me. He's not a part of the council.
Okay.
Let me go to the YouTube chat real quick. I love this note from Matt Papa. So you guys know Matt Papa is a true Double L loyal listener. Matt Papa in YouTube wrote, Edmure took the advice, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
So quick question then. So tell me your interpretation of how the council met and what the power dynamic is between the council and Grey Worm. Because I truly don't. I don't see what you're seeing.
I'm seeing that Grey Worm isn't from this country. He doesn't know these people. He doesn't even like this country, as we've already established. He's not going to be a ruler. He's not going to decide. His queen, all his life, all Grey Worm's life, somebody's been telling him what to do. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. You're going to do this. Through Missandei, he grew as a person. And he said, you know, after the battle is won, before the in episode two of this season, he's like, you know, I'm going to go to Noth and I'll protect your people who can't protect themselves. And right. So it's not – so suddenly he's not going to be a guy who's going to be giving orders. Why? Because his character has never given orders, so, you know, outside of passing orders along to his troops. And so I thought that made perfect sense. I thought I thought he would naturally say, well, okay, who's going to handle this mess? Let's turn to the people who are leaders here already. And people who, let's be honest, were part of Daenerys' team. Jon Royce was part of Daenerys' team. Sansa, Daenerys had problems with Sansa, but she was part of the team. Sam was part of the team, right? Like, to me, it makes perfect sense.
Right. But him not killing Jon Snow, who killed Daenerys, you agree that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. You have to agree with that, because that makes no sense.
I think that he is a guy, once again, who was made to give orders. Who would have given him the order to kill Jon Snow or Tyrion? Nobody. He would have had to have kept the hatred that he had for Missandei's death and used that, you know, because theoretically he used that to go some, you know, to go the distance on making decisions and kind of stuff. But, you know, I just didn't see it. I don't see Grey Worm as that type of character. Of course, I didn't see him going nuts in the last episode, but I just didn't see him as that type of character.
That would kill the person who killed his queen.
Who would kill the person who killed his queen, yes, if there's no one there. He's been raised from childhood to be obedient.
So someone has to tell him to kill the person who killed his queen. Otherwise, he won't do it.
Well, what are you going to do? The queen isn't – like, since Grey Worm has been on the show, he's been following her. So you're saying suddenly he's gonna think like you do, like somebody who was raised like you are. Like, you love this point. Like, why isn't he thinking like me? I think it makes perfect sense he's not thinking like you, Catfish. Sorry.
I mean, you're describing him as a computer that's waiting for input code, and I don't quite feel that he's that much of an automaton. He's a human being who has anger and knows how to channel that anger.
He does have that, I'll grant you. Okay, but he didn't have anger, or he somehow controlled his anger when he came across Jon Snow. Is it possible Jon Snow confessed? And so it's not like, you know, it's not like he saw it happen. I don't know. I could see how your anger could dissipate if it's like, you know, there's not even a body there to get angry over.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
You're right. I wouldn't get angry either. My entire way of life has now just been just destroyed by this person. But I'll wait for someone to tell me.
Oh, my God. You know what? If you don't accept it, I accept it. But your argument that everybody has to see it the way you do, give me a break. I completely disagree with that.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. So
we talk about how John walks through town and nobody else kills him? You're not going to tell me the Dothraki need to have orders to kill Jon Snow.
No, I have to be honest. I didn't see Dothraki in the walk through town. If they're there,
oh yeah,
I
they
apologize.
Were there. Yeah, he walked the right by some. He walked by some on the way to the boat.
Well, okay, then these are the worst Dothraki ever. Let's be honest.
All right. Yeah.
But I want to point out, and I think Judd, you were talking about this, and maybe you were too as well, Catfish, that the people I was watching it with, they were like, well, wait a minute, the North gets to be free? That's a bit ridiculous.
Well, yeah, because they have connections with the king.
Yeah, they got connections with the king, and they've also, I mean, everyone in the North, I think the North has definitely suffered the most.
Also, let's be honest.
Out of the houses we've been following.
I mean, on one hand, you could say really nobody wants the North. It's, nobody's invaded Canada lately because of the weather.
Well, actually, speaking of weather, can you guys walk me through this? As soon as when they met in the Dragon Pit, it was now springtime. So
right, and I explained this to Judd. Now, it may not have been part of the show.
Well, you said it, but I don't know if you'd explain.
Part of the idea is right. Well, we were moving on quickly. Part of the idea is that this is, you know, the fact that the seasons wax and wanes, and then there's longer winters and shorter winters. It's got nothing to do with earthly conditions. It has more to do with, like, the Night King, and it has to do with magical conditions. So banishing, so killing the Night King has wiped away the long winter.
But wouldn't have winter ended, wouldn't spring have come basically the next day?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Before they had a battle.
But it's been a few months. It takes a little while to clear up. The snow's got to get off the ground.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Okay.
Did you guys like, and I'm going to go to you first, Catfish, because you keep saying how you love this character. Did you like that Tyrion ends up Hand of the King? He fought it for a bit, but he accepted it. What did you think, Catfish?
Yeah, it makes sense to me. As you could tell, I was thinking critically about this scene, so I wasn't as enjoying it as much as I could have. I think perhaps he doth protest too much. You know, he wants that power.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool, but it was more of a, sort of titular redemption, I think, than anything else.
He's clearly going to have a lot of work to do because the king is like, I'm dragoning, peace out, you figure things out.
No. And I mean, that for me, it's just another, little bit of a frustration with this year is I'd like to see them kind of getting it back on their feet. I'd like to see Bran giving one, speech to the people as the king or something like that. We've been following these characters for 8 seasons over 10 years. It just felt like we're ending it, really quickly. It's not about tying up loose ends, but it's sort of like, all right, well, let's get a sense of what, like, we know what Jon's life up north beyond the wall is going to be like, or at the wall it's going to be like. But a lot of these other people, Bronn and the High Council, we don't. And so I would have liked to have, gotten to savor that a little bit more. And we didn't get that.
I had a special glee in Jon Snow's exit from King's Landing because they shot some of this in Dubrovnik, and I'm seeing all these places that I've visited in real life, and I really loved it. Even what they do sometimes is they digitally composite different areas of Dubrovnik into this setting for King's Landing, and so I really, really liked it. Grey Worm, Catfish, and I have gone back and forth on Grey Worm, but how about this? His kind of end note is that he is flying north, or sorry, flying north. He's taking a boat south to Noth. He told Missandei that he could protect her people who don't seem to have any defenses and can't protect themselves. He's going to protect her people. I really like that as a note for him. What do you think?
Let's hope he protects the people better than Daenerys protected King's Landing.
You know what? We know if he needs to hit that kill switch, he's ready.
No, he has to wait for someone to tell him.
Right. Well, wait a minute. Who do you think decided to go to Noth? And it seems to be him. So he is an automaton, but he didn't play politics in Westeros. He decided to go play it in the Isle of Noth.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I'm gonna let you listen to that one again and then think about it. So we have now. Why do you think? I mean, Jon Snow. Obviously, he's bummed. He like you said, his love life is a mess. He's always with the wrong women, strong women. But why do you think he seems so – it's weird that he seems so sad to go back to the north. Like, that's pretty much all he ever wanted. He didn't want to be king. I don't see – he seems to react to being sent to the Night's Watch like it's a death sentence when really it's the best thing ever because he can go up there and be as mopey-mopersome as he wants.
Bubba, do you think that we should have seen a little bit more of Sam and John down in King's Landing?
What I would say to the answer to that, why I kind of went with it and why John is questioning what's happening to him and being depressed about going back to the Night's Watch, part of me is it goes to that scene he had with Tyrion where he was like, still questioning, and I mean the scene at the end when Tyrion is telling Jon his fate, he's still questioning if he did the right thing. And so I don't think it's – I think anything was going to be torture for him because he's still torturing himself over this decision he made with Daenerys.
Right, and granted, he seems to give – I mean, for Jon Snow, it's practically a laugh. He gives like the slightest hint of like 1/20th of a smile on his way when he's riding through the north. But of course, before he goes, though, he gets another one of Broken Brand's famous koans.
Yeah, the goodbye on the docks. Bubba, yeah. How did he feel?
I mean, Broken Brand's going to write a book of his koans, but it's all going to be on every page. It's going to be the same thing, just worded differently. You were where you were supposed to be. You did what you were supposed to do. If you hadn't been there, you wouldn't be here.
It's a perfect way. It's a perfect way of ruling, if you think about it.
Right?
Well, how would you like to be the one person who Brand's like, everything you did brought you to here? You screwed it all up, you moron. If Bran tells you that, you're really, really screwed. Did you guys like, even if Bran has just got his witty quips, did you feel emotional or like, enjoy Jon's goodbye to his siblings? Arya's telling him she's not going north. Bran seems to be down here for good. How did you guys feel about this?
It certainly didn't seem that permanent. I mean, you know, if Arya is going to sail off the other side of the world, you know, okay. But I don't think, you know, I think she'll go have a great adventure. She's 15 years old, for God's sakes. You know, I don't think
the show recently came out and said the character was 18 years old, okay, based on her passionate night with Gendry.
Yes, thank you. But yeah, so she's 18. You know, Jon is going to be easy to find. Sansa's not that far away, and Bran's the king. If he wants to go north, he can. So it didn't feel like a forever goodbye.
This is just Arya's gap year.
Yeah,
you study abroad. Let's do it.
You know, yeah. She went east and she did Braavos, and now she's going west. She's covering her bases.
Yeah, I kind of have felt a little, and again, some of my problems with this year have stopped me from sort of maybe fully absorbing some things. And one of them, as I was talking about earlier, was sort of Arya's transformation. So like Judd, it's hard for me to feel that this is permanent because I don't have a sense of like a true transformation from her. Like, I'm done with this world. Like, I just feel like it's a gap year. So if I felt like she was truly done, then I think I would feel sadder, but I don't, for various reasons.
Yeah, there is also that line where she says, no one knows. So it's kind of like, okay, well, then you do know what's over there. You know, like, so, I don't think it's goodbye for very long at all.
I think this is a good moment to go ahead and pause and give away another prize.
Yeah.
So, once again, listeners, I am going to roll to find out which of our Season 8 Survivor columns we're going to go to. And so let me roll the dice. It's week 3. Okay, so week 3, Catfish, roll it. Let's see who wins. Let's hope you don't roll a 1.
Mark's rolling it. And he rolled a
4.
4.
That's Caroline Fleming. Caroline Fleming, reach out to us at DoublePHQ on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/DoublePHQ. We
CF.
We love, love, love our loyal listeners. Somebody else who has some love is Brienne. She is writing in the White Book. This goes back to Season 4, Episode 1, where Joffrey, His Grace King Joffrey, first of his name, first in your hearts, was talking trash about how Jaime's entry was pointless. And so Brienne decides to write Jaime's stuff. What did you think? What do you begin? How do you feel?
Well, I mean, she's not going to get him back. So it seemed like it was a little depressing. But, you know, God bless her. And we're sort of jumping around a little bit. It's going to come as a huge shock. But Tyrion not getting any mention in the, in the Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, that was great.
You know, so there was a little bit of a nice echo there. But I thought I was pretty sad. I mean, you know, she's got plenty of time to do that, and you know, maybe she could have gone out on a date with Pod or something like that. I don't know.
That would be sir on sir action.
Does anybody want to comment? I commented on it in the room I was watching, and everybody was like, oh, yeah. Do you notice that if Brienne is leader of the Kingsguard, that her breastplate is showing a three-eyed raven? Bran isn't using the direwolf sigil. He's using the three-eyed raven sigil. I thought that was so interesting. And I think for a lot of Brienne Jaime shippers who are so hurt that the character Jaime went back to the woman he loved his whole life and was pregnant with his child, I think they're going to really enjoy this moment. I want to go ahead and talk about some of the great comments we're getting Facebook as we're doing this live. We have Jacqueline Mukwi, who wrote, "Where is Arya going? Doesn't she know the world is flat?" Matt Papa wrote, "Definite 10 out of 10, a perfect wrap-up. Just as Bubba said, it began with Bran, it ends with Bran in some ways." Love that. But somebody in the Facebook chat called John White says, "I'm not sure how I feel. Going to have to sit on this for one hot minute." Jamie Burnside wrote, "Season 7 was stupid. Season 8 was adequate to good." And we also have... So we have John, and I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name, John. John wrote, "Chaos is a handicap rap."
All right, and I just want to give a shout-out to Mike Killey on Twitter, who said they should have just brought back Joffrey like Fit and Trim, and CJG Man 67 had prophesized.
Oh, yes, you know it. On YouTube, Dooley's Left Leg just says, "I think we all overthought it a little bit with the theories. Hopefully George R. R. Martin adds a few more twists." Excellent.
Oh, man. Dooley's overseas in our mother nation. He is up early / late.
Love it, love it, love it. All right, so we saw Brienne write this nice entry for Jaime. I could pause it. You guys will see the screensavers. The episode is entitled "The Iron Throne," and we, instead of seeing the Iron Throne or any new throne in this episode, we see Tyrion sitting at the Hand of the King table, a place where he's had so many scenes. He's wearing the Hand of the King pin. He adjusts the chairs. Adjusting chairs was a bit of comedy that he and Cersei had back in season 3 in another episode directed by creators D.B. Weiss and David Benioff. And then Tyrion's small council came in. Do you guys like his small council? Thoughts? Let's hear it.
I mean, it's great to see Samwell as the big maester. I guess now he can steal whatever books he wants. He also shows an opposite proclivities to not the previous maester, but the maester before the previous maester, Grand Maester.
Pycelle.
Pycelle would be very upset to find out that the present maester is down on brothels.
Oh, yeah, I know. Interesting. This book in the show's universe here, The Song of Ice and Fire, was written by Maester Ebros, who, of course, was played by Jim Broadbent back last season. Small council, we have Davos Seaworth, Master of Ships. We have Grand Maester Samwell getting busy with a love life maester. We had Bronn, who was, what was Bronn's title again? Master of Coin?
Master of Coin.
He loves coins, and he seems finally happy with coins. We have Brienne, leader of the King's Guard. We have Podrick on the King's Guard. I actually think a lot of people are going to like this final small council we'll ever see.
It's great. The only thing I'm upset about is that Tyrion talked about bringing a jackal and a honeycomb into a brothel, and I thought that is a perfect setup for a joke, and jackass and a honeycomb, and I never heard the punchline to that joke.
We haven't heard it in season 1, episode 5, when he told the setup to it in the Eyrie. We never saw it when he told it to Grey Worm and Missandei when he was trying to make them laugh. Everybody, this is a great point as ever. If that you are going to be missing some Game of Thrones content and you're missing it as some of these podcasts that you love disappear, go back and look at the Joffrey of Podcast archives. I'm going to just go through some of these real quick. If you miss Game of Thrones content, and say you weren't a Double L from episode one, we encourage you to go check those out. In our very first podcast, we came up with our Joffrey of the Weeks. In our second podcast, we came up with this annoying letter game where we give everything a double, triple, quadruple. And we also came up with our spin-off specials. We have Words of Wisdom with Uncle Craster, Crazy Crassness's Crazy Roller Disco Fun Jam on Hot Ostapori Nights. That was the very second episode of the podcast. We've had Hanging in the Friend Zone with Sir Jorah Mormont, Rick Steves Guide to the Best of Westeros, Mama's Boys with Little Robin Aaron, Khalasar Confessions with Khal Drogo, Bubba and Catfish, Sing Joffrey Carols for the Holidays.
Oh, those were phenomenal.
Selyse Baratheon's Holy Hour with Lord of Light, Westeros Cops, Making Bestiality Cool Again with Dormund Giantsbane. We did the Bravosi comedy routine classic No One's on First, Dr. Phil in Westeros, the Therapy with Dr. Yara Greyjoy, and we did Randall Tarley Museum Tour Guide. We've done so many things. In our fifth episode, we did Scaring the Unstraighteners Straight. In our sixth episode, we started reading from the Joffrey POV chapters in the books. We mentioned on our podcast that is a wrap-up. The next podcast we're going to put out, we're going to read one of these Joffrey chapters from A Dream of Spring. We've done book bitching. We had the frame-by-frame analysis, non-boring, the boring scenes, better call calls, special things. Go through the Joffrey podcast archives to get all your wonderful Joffrey needs.
Oh, yeah. My favorites were the carols, and also whenever we did the scenes that were never aired or chapters that were never released from the point of view of the surly and often drunken Starks.
Oh, so good, so good, so good. So we say goodbye to Braun, Brienne, Pod, Bran, Davos. Any last thoughts on these great characters we said goodbye to, guys?
I mean, for the longest time, I have been mostly excited with the show because I knew it was going to end and we'd have an ending to it. And also because it had streamlined some things that George R. R. Martin has decided to just every time he writes a new book to add some new crazy stuff, which is making it more difficult for him to finish the books. I guess after this, I will be interested in that hopefully George R. R. Martin will finish the books so that we can see it the way he intended or as likely as I think, is if he did some stuff, if he had some stuff planned that he sees a bad reaction to, that he might change it in the books and do something else. So I am grateful that that HBO did this show, that a fantasy show was able to gain such a following, I think has opened the doors for other kinds of shows that I like, fantasy and science fiction shows, to get bigger budgets and to have better writing. So I'm grateful for the Game of Thrones. I'm most grateful, however, for the fact that in my heart of hearts, I know that Joffrey is still alive and that he became the Master of the Faces and that he is actually took Bran's face and now actually Joffrey is actually running Westeros.
Mork, any thoughts on all these characters we're saying goodbye to?
Well, that's a brilliant. That's actually a brilliant reveal. Thank you, Catfish. I believe that's true. I feel like this in a lot of ways this year has been an extended goodbye. We've had, you know, we've spent plenty of time just sitting around and chatting and drinking with them, whether it's before or after battles. So I feel like I had my chance to, you know, to say goodbye to them. And some, you know, some are dead, and some are pretending to be Bran. I think they left them in a good place. Do we know for sure though that Bran can't have children?
That is for the spinoff series.
Okay.
Bran's noble attempts.
Bran's going to be really interested in that brothel opening up.
Yeah. It just seemed like it was like, if I was Bran and my sister was like, and he can't, I'd be like, hey, sis, come on.
I think the implication is he can't have kids. But one of the things that another thing that I did like about this ending is that it's so open ended. George Martin, through Tyrion, possibly in this episode, loves stories. He loves telling tales, and so the fact that you know all of us can imagine, and he can possibly write after he finishes everything else, stories of Tyrion and serving King Bran the Broken. He can have stories of Arya sailing west of Westeros. He can write a short story about Queen Sansa's reign in the North. He can write a story about Jon Snow, who was the 998th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, is now the 1,000th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. He has all these abilities.
How about Grey Worm enjoying his first fresh pineapple?
Or Hot Pie creating the first hamburger?
Would love it. So as Jon Snow is leading the wildlings north of the Wall, and we're getting this montage of these three characters, Sansa, Arya, and Jon. Jon's there with Tormund and Ghost, of course. He has that great moment with Ghost that everybody was so upset that he didn't have in the previous episode. But north of the Wall, there was a bit of green growing in, and I loved that shot. Jon Snow, he watches the door close behind him. Rangers entering.
Apparently all those people couldn't go into the north until Jon Snow was set free. Sorry, my last quibble.
Well, I think the idea was, Catfish, and Tormund said it a couple episodes ago, that he was just going to take the wildlings to Castle Black, and then they were going to go through the wall once spring came, or once... And so that's what I believe we're supposed to be seeing right now.
Have they rebuilt the wall?
Well, we haven't ever seen what happened near Eastwatch, which is the only area of the wall which is no longer together.
Okay, gotcha.
And so it ends with Jon Snow going north. Is Jon Snow, let's do our own kind of spin-off show. Is Jon Snow going to ever stop being a mopey? He smiled a bit when he saw a ghost, but now that he's, you know, he's got a bit of the true north in him, is he going to go rebuild Craster's? What's it going to take to get Jon Snow to be happy?
I mean, he's just going to have to find another spicy woman. You know, I say... the more that he hangs out with Tormund, the better his life is going to be. Because Tormund's a little rolling party man, so you just got to hang with him.
Well, I would guess that John and one of Tormund's daughters would hook up.
He's prettier than my daughters.
Well, there you go.
You know, whatever someone said to John, you can't get married. He would be like, I mean. Doesn't work out anyway, so what the hell?
At this point, yeah, exactly.
Married? That's fine. I don't need to be married.
I don't think he's signing up for Westerosi Tinder anytime soon.
At YouTube, Holly said, finally Ghost got the pets. Pet he deserve.
Aww.
Or pets. Sorry, she was saying Patman Spinagle. The pets he deserves. I was like, he is a pet. Oh, wait. Is Catfish, we have a question in the YouTube chat from Jesse Jordan. Is Catfish going to stop moping? And Catfish did stop moping. He got an ending, but now he's looking forward to the books. Am I summing you up correctly?
That's right. You know what? I have been calling Jon Snow Mopey Moperson all these years. And so proud that someone came up with a Twitter handle at Mopey Moperson. I should just be happy for that.
He lives on.
Let me say, based on what Jake Panzer wrote in the YouTube comments, I'm going to have to point this out. When I mentioned, if you're missing Game of Thrones content, go through and listen to some of our back episodes. So we had an episode that was set between the seasons where Daenerys was on her cruise from Essos to Westeros, and we did Grey Worm's comedy routine. And in Grey Worm's comedy routine, he finished the setup. He had a couple of punchlines for the joke, Jackass and Honeycomb in a Brothel. But we have another great response to this from Jake in the YouTube chat. So you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I once brought a jackass and a honeycomb into a brothel and said to them, you are exactly where you're supposed to be.
I love it. That is amazing. Oh, man, that is a winning prize. So Bubba, we're not done with the Joffrey podcast, though, aren't we? We're going to have 1, 2, 3, 5, 12 more?
Yeah, we're not getting canceled. Once again, we're going to have an episode out over the next couple of weeks where we're going to watch this documentary about making Game of Thrones, final season and making Game of Thrones. And we're going to have a wrap-up where we really get to talk about our feelings about the show. Right now, we are recording this seconds or minutes, I should say, after the episode aired. And so our feelings can change. We can have maybe more intelligent thoughts than sometimes we have. And so we're going to have that out. And then we're going to probably have a podcast, which will be one of our panels we're going to do at Con of Thrones in July. And then when the when the spinoff series start, we'll be there. Keep subscribed in your podcast feeds to the Joffrey Podcast. We're never going to leave. And let me say real quickly, loyal listeners, we're going to give away one more prize right now. And the reason why we do it, the only reason why we do this podcast and do all this work is because interacting with you guys, facebook.com/doublephq, at doublephq on Twitter and Instagram, on YouTube at search the Joffrey Podcast, dealing with you guys really make this wonderful. You guys... You guys have all survived season 8, and we're so glad that you downloaded and listened to us. Catfish, are you ready to give away our final prize tonight?
I'm ready, and I know we'll have some other prizes on our next podcast, but I'm ready for the last one tonight.
All right, so let me roll the die. Ooh, one. Oh, boy. So this is going to the very first episode of season 8 where we listed a whole bunch, over 20 survivors of season 8. These are double L's who wrote to us on Twitter, Instagram, gave us YouTube reviews, that kind of stuff. So Catfish, roll that 20-sided die, and let's see who wins.
Lucky number 13.
Yay!
All right, you guys are going to have to vamp.
It's true that the prize is to give you guys their hotel room at Conover.
Yes, you get to put us on your couch at Con of Thrones. That's what we're going to do. Now, look.
Okay, number 13. Oh, guess who it is? It's somebody that we truly love. It's Matt Papa at Matt Papa.
Matt Papa, yeah!
We're going to give away more prizes on our next podcast, so thank you very, very much. Catfish, we have just a couple other things we need to do in tonight's podcast, and what are those?
Well, the one thing we have to do is we have to talk about the Joffrey of the Week. Again, as if we weren't reminded tonight by amazingly... Joffrey coming back as Bran and taking over the throne without shedding 1 ounce of blood. And you'll notice when he goes into his council, he says, I'm going to take care of this other thing, which he can't really do because he's not the Third-Eyed Raven. He's just Joffrey. But in other words, he makes the entire council do all of his work, and he goes off to find the new talent for the brothels. So because Joffrey is so amazing, the most amazing character in the history of the world, universe, all of entirety, real or fictional, we like to come up with somebody every week who embodies one small facet of Joffrey. No one can embody all facets of Joffrey, but we'd like to give you someone that you can aspire to. So every week we pick a different person, place, thing. Sometimes it's been ID. It's very abstract. It can be very abstract when Bubba can't come up with something and has to come up with something.
I'm ready.
All right. So, Bubba, why don't you go first then? Who is your Joffrey of the Week?
Joffrey is powerful. What Joffrey says happens. You know, we were debating if Grey Worm has any initiative or if he's an automaton. Joffrey is his initiative. He is his leader. So for my Joffrey of the Week, it's an idea. It's the end. Where does everything end? Everything ends with His Grace Joffrey. Where did the feral cats in King's Landing end? They ended with Joffrey. Where did this story end? It ended with His Grace King Joffrey. So the end is my Joffrey of the Week.
Wow, that is super heavy. I love that you came up with that while I was vamping.
Keep vamping. I'll come up with another one.
Mork, who is your Joffrey of the Week?
Well, I think one thing that we've learned over the years from listening to the insight of the Joffrey podcast is that Joffrey isn't always here as much as we'd like him to be. So my Joffrey of the Week are episodes 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Oh, wow. That is beautiful.
That's pretty good,
Mork. Both of you came up with very beautiful things, and my Joffrey of the Week is very prosaic. Joffrey is a strong, almost mythical being. Who, when he sees trouble, he leaves to come back when it's more advantageous to him. So my Joffrey of the week is Drogon,
yes,
who peaced out with Daenerys, took a hot blonde with him.
I'm breaking a chair
and
leaving.
And he'll be back later on. Drogon is my Joffrey of the week.
Listeners, once again, we're doing this for you. Write to us on Twitter, all the places I've said a million times. For everybody here at Double P Media, my name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I am Catfish. You can hit me up at CJGman67 on Twitter.
And Mark is at Extraordinary. That's Extraordinary with the W in front of the final R.
And we will talk to you next time on
The Joffrey of Podcast.
Hamburger.